We talked about quite a lot about domestic abuse and what it does to people. And there's a new law come into force which should give more protection to victims. So that's what we're going to talk about. And this law will make it illegal to exercise what's called coercive control over a partner or a family member. It will criminalise psychological and emotional abuse. I don't know quite how you define psychological and emotional abuse, and that's what we're going to talk about to the minister involved, the Home Office Minister called Karen Bradley, in a little while. Anyone convicted of the crime could face up to 5 years in prison. But how do you prove coercive and controlling behaviour? As I say, I'll talk to the minister about that, and obviously I'd like to hear your stories as well. Perhaps, first of all, you'd like to listen to one particular story, and that of Raina Holden. Raina is 18. Last November, her boyfriend, called Daryl Moore, beat her unconscious in a pub car park. That's the story, that's the video I've told you about, because it was filmed on CCTV, and the video is available, and very distressing viewing it is too. Raina had been in a relationship with Daryl for 2 years, but he began to show a lot of the patterns of this kind of coercive control, which will be covered by the new law. And Raina has been good enough and indeed brave enough to stand up and talk about all this and indeed to join me now. Hi, Raina.
Hi.
Take me back. When did you meet Daryl?
I met Daryl in the July of 2013.
How old were you then?
I was 16.
And he was the real thing for you, was he?
Yeah, he was dead. I think it was his confidence that was the most about him that attracted me to him.
Yeah. And your mum moved away, and you moved in with him in the end, did you?
Yes, I did.
Mm. And at the to begin with, was everything all right?
Everything was perfect. He was working. He was a turbine engineer. He was travelling away and to back and to from work, coming back, and we was going on trips to Blackpool.
Life was okay.
Yeah, it was good.
What were you doing at the time?
I was in college doing hair and beauty in Skipton.
So it all seemed all right, and then things started to deteriorate a bit. So what happened?
Well, he started to drink a lot more and started taking drugs. He started getting very aggressive with his mouth.
Yeah. Job lost as well at the same time, somebody tells me.
Yeah, he ended up losing his job through drugs, and he blamed me for it.
Right. And the control began then, I guess. Well, yeah. Tell us how he behaved.
Well, it was more to do... At first, it was to do with blaming me for losing his job and that the fact that my mother wasn't here, so he was like, because of you, I got dumped and I'm looking after you. He wasn't violent at this point. It was just more with the aggression when he was speaking. He would get in my face. He wouldn't let me talk. He didn't like it, like, say, if I was talking to other people, if we was out, other men. He got a bit jealous when I was ringing my parents, you know, on the phone, speak to my family, just things like that.
He moved you away from home in the end, did he?
Well, no, what actually happened is he ended up having an overdose due to losing his job.
Mm.
And all that, and his mother come back down from Washington, collected him, took him back up there, and there was a period of time, I think it was about 3 months, we weren't together. I ended up in the YMCA in Skipton, and I stayed there just waiting on him because I was still speaking to him during this period that his mum had took him back up to Washington.
Had you begun to doubt the whole thing at that stage?
I'd begin to doubt it, but I was still holding on to it because I was still madly in love with him, and he kept telling me he would come back for me when he was ready.
Mm.
So because he was telling me he was going to come back for me, I just waited in North Yorkshire for him to come and get me, and then he did, and he ended up getting taken up to Washington, and that's then when the abuse started.
What sort of physical abuse?
Yeah, the physical, it was horrendous. He was angry all the time. There was nights he would stay up for 5 nights, just completely off his face, drinking, drugs. He would come back. I didn't like it. I would end up arguing with him because of it. We were living in his mum's house at the time. He would end up lashing out, and because of me crying and screaming, his mother didn't like it. We ended up getting kicked out because she didn't want the neighbours ringing the police.
Did you think, right, this is it, I'm out, I'm off, at any stage?
No, because I was... Well, it was happening, this is what I mean. I didn't even realise it was happening, even though I knew it was going on. Because I was I was that much in love with him. It was like I was oblivious to it.
To what he was doing.
Yeah, I just didn't want to believe it.
See, I mean, I've only seen your picture, Ray, and I never met you, but you're a lovely looking lady, and you know, I'm sure you could take your pick. So didn't you know? Didn't you think, well, I'm off. You know, this is mad. Why am I putting up with this? Didn't that strike you?
Love's blind, isn't it?
Yeah.
Love's blind. Nothing. Do you want to know what hold me most to him?
Then.
It was, I kept thinking I could help him and he was gonna change.
He's gonna come straight again. And you would have done it. And
yeah.
The man you loved, you'd have looked after.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it didn't go that way.
So I talked about that video and I got to say, it's one of the most unpleasant things I've watched for a long time, in which he chases you into a car park from what looks like a pub backyard and then just whacks you around, keeps on going on and on.
He didn't stop.
He's really trying to hurt you.
He didn't stop. That night, I genuinely did think I was going to die. I didn't think he was...
He punched you, he kicked you, he dragged you around.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what were you thinking when all that was going on?
I thought I was going to die. I remember screaming up to him, screaming to him to stop. I was begging him. I got hit with a glass as well. He chased me first. I got glassed. I was rolling when I was up on that banking. I was rolling about in glass. I just kept screaming and screaming. I remember coming round unconscious when I was at the bins.
It was his mate who got him off in the end, and somebody else turns up, and that's his friend, is it? I see it. Somebody else turns up.
Yeah, that was his friend. He was there the whole time.
Was he?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you could have died there, you know?
Yeah, well, I did. I got told if the attack would have gone on for, say, 10 more minutes, that I probably could have died.
And you still didn't report him, did you?
No, it was the Cross Keys
pub. Oh, Raina, come on. I mean, why? You know, he's trying to kill you.
I didn't want to get in. I didn't want him in trouble. I still loved him. I still thought that... in my head, I thought that he didn't mean it. I thought that I had made him angry. I believed it was my fault because I was arguing with him and he lost his temper.
He got convicted of assault, jailed not for long, so having seen what he did to you, it seems to me pretty minor, but 12 months of which, and he only served two. And I read somewhere that you intervened to try and get him a lesser sentence.
Yes, I did. What it was I was still in love with him, and as well as that, his mother was very manipulating, and she knew that I was still in love with him. And
she said you had to try to help her son, yeah.
Exactly, so I did, and I wrote a letter saying that I drugged him.
You wrote a letter saying it was all your fault?
Yeah, I drugged him, and that's why the attack happened.
What do you feel about him now?
I have a lot of bitterness for him.
When did it turn? When did you decide to put your life back together?
In February. I mean, he got arrested well before February, but I still chose to stay in Sunderland until February because I still loved him. I chose to keep lying to my family as
you
well.
You need a friend at a time like this. Who helped you out?
I had no one. I was up there on my own. I was still lying to my family, telling my family everything was okay. I was telling my dad everything was okay. I just had certain few people in Washington that I knew, but they were still Daryl's friends. They weren't really my friends, do you know what I mean?
Yeah. So how did you get your life back together?
Well, in February, I ended up having an overdose in Washington, in Sunderland, and... I realised then that I couldn't do this anymore, and I rang my dad and I told him everything, and he come and got me.
See, the thing is, this new legislation, and we're going to talk to the minister about it next, and I'd like you to listen to what she's got to say, but unless you want to get out of it, it's not going to happen, isn't it? And right the way through, you didn't really want to get out of this relationship.
No, I didn't.
Even if there'd been a law there to say, we can help you, you wouldn't have asked for it.
I wouldn't have asked for it.
Yeah.
They need to have a law where they can step in. They can
say.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's going to be very difficult, though. Look, listen, thank you for very, very grateful for you for doing that, Raina. And in particular, I mean, you let this footage, you've said put it out, haven't you?
It is out. It's
a sure decision to let it go. I mean, it is, as I say, it's shocking stuff. When you watch it yourself,
I can't really watch it back myself anymore because every time I do, it does get me really upset because it brings back, like, I can remember the whole of that that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Do you know what I mean? I can remember certain things that were said.
How are you now, Rani? You sound fine. I mean, how are things?
Well, do you know what? I'm doing a lot better. I mean, I'm back in college. I'm doing my GCSEs, which I managed to get myself back into. I'm seeing psychologists, and I am getting myself back on my feet. And I've got my family around me, which is really all that I needed. And I've got my friends, and I've got my new partner, Anthony.
Yeah, good. Well, I'd like you to stay with us just for a second. You've got a couple of minutes. You can listen to the minister, and then I'll come back to you.
Yeah, that's fine.
That's good. Getting some texts about all this. This is really the key, says one texter. I thought he would change. I thought I could change him. And that, in a way, is, I suspect, a key to a lot of these relationships, which seem kind of hopeless to those who watch them from the outside. Now, as we've heard, the violence Darryl inflicted grew out of some very controlling behaviour, and this is what the government aims to get tough with when they recognise that coercive control should be part of the 2015 Serious Crime Act. Sounds like a nice idea, doesn't it? But how does it work? How could it work? I've been speaking to Karen Bradley, Minister for Preventing Abuse and Exploitation. I asked her to define this new offence.
Well, what we're looking for is patterns of behaviour, so not one-off incidents, of psychological and emotional control. So this might be somebody who doesn't have access to their own money, isn't allowed to see their family and friends, isn't allowed to decide what they're doing, has a partner who controls them in an unacceptable way. And we're not talking about what happens in normal, loving relationships.
Yeah.
We're talking about those kind of abusive relationships where there's a long-term, sustained pattern of behaviour.
Yeah, I understand that, though it's not always easy to define the difference between psychological and behavioural control and what often happens in relationships where one person, to some extent, dominates another. There is a kind of grey area. Would you agree?
Look, you know, this is one of the difficulties we had with drafting this law. And it was one of the things we were determined to do it, but it is a very difficult thing to put into legislation. Legislation is often a blunt instrument, and you're trying to use it to describe a difficult relationship.
Yeah.
But it is something that's important we should have, because it's this kind of behaviour that can develop into violent behaviour, but also it can mean that people live lives that are absolutely unacceptable, and we don't want to see this happen. We want to make sure people have the law enforcement has the tools it needs to help people. And I do think, you know, we've seen with the stalking legislation that there was a lot of doubt about that when we brought that in. Could the police actually understand it? Is that kind of pattern of behaviour something that could be found and prosecuted? And we've seen that it can be, and it is being used. So I'm confident that we can get there.
Mm. When might the police start to use it?
Well, we're hoping to start very soon. We are working, as you know, you've rightly said that this is a complicated issue. So we're working hard with the College of Policing, with the Crown Prosecution Service and others to make sure that the guidance that we issue is very clear and understandable. But, you know, I was in Staffordshire recently, which is where my constituency is as well, but I visited the police centrally there to look at what tools they're developing to help frontline officers. And it was really simple things that they could use and things they could ask that might possibly help them to establish that this is someone in a coercive relationship. Well, for example, you know, do you have access to your own money? Are you allowed to decide when you go out of the house? Do you have the ability to contact your family and friends when you want to? Those sort of indicators are helping the police to be able to see this kind of behaviour and see this relationship.
Mm. First thing that's going to happen is a perpetrator would say, look, I'm acting in the victim's best interests.
Well, you know, perpetrators will say many things, but what we're trying to do is to make sure that the police have the tools that they need. So, for example, we want the police to be using body-worn cameras where you can see on the film the behaviour and how the perpetrator and the victim are behaving together. Give really, really powerful evidence that can actually help us get through a criminal justice system far more quickly and in a painless fashion for the victim, despite the fact, you know, this is always going to be painful, but it can be as pain-free as possible with that sort of type of evidence.
I don't envy the police this role. I mean, domestic abuse is difficult enough. A lot of that evidence we found last year, a lot of crime, domestic abuse goes undetected and certainly not prosecuted. And I just wonder whether police have got time for this.
Well, do you know, saying that that this is difficult isn't an excuse. It's not acceptable.
Yeah, but they are under pressure. I mean,
we have
they got
to
a mass
sure.
of jobs and they got cuts at the same time.
Well, what we have to see, and that's something we're seeing across the country, is multi-agency workers. Because, you know, actually, if you're a victim, the police are there to solve the crime, but actually the agencies that can help you and give you the support they need are not the police. It's that's the health, social care. It's making sure that we've got the right agencies working together.
Do you suspect that this is a significant social problem? Do you have any evidence that there is a real need for this legislation?
Well, I think, you know, let's look at the Troubled Families Programme that the last government did. That was looking at particular behaviours, for example, children not attending school, adults who weren't in work. But actually, when we've looked back at the evidence from those families, the 120,000 families, domestic abuse was occurring in a large number of those families. And the problem is we will never break the cycle, because children who come from families where there's been domestic abuse can often feel that that is an acceptable way to treat women. It's an acceptable way to behave to women. We have to start breaking that cycle. We have to get in, stopping people becoming perpetrators in the first place.
No, I understand exactly where you come from, and I'm sure everybody would have every sympathy with what you're trying to do, but it's just so difficult. I mean, I was looking at some figures which suggested only 1% of stalking cases ever get to court. Bringing these things to court is going to be fearsomely difficult for you.
It is, but you know, it's not just about bringing things to court. It's about stopping the crime happening in the first place. Actually, every conviction is in many ways, it's a sign that something's gone wrong, isn't it? Because it means a crime has been committed that we have a conviction for. Much better that we can do everything we can to stop the crimes happening in the first place, to change perpetrator behaviour, to make it clear to people. You know, I've met people who said, nobody ever told me it was wrong to treat women in that way, because that's how my father treated my mother, and I just thought it was normal.
That was Karen Bradley, Home Office Minister, backing this new abuse law, which is going to be implemented, they hope, before the end of the year. Raina Holden is with me, a victim of domestic abuse, is still herself a very dramatic story to tell. And also Rachel Horman, who's a domestic abuse lawyer at Watson Ramsbottom in Lancashire and chairs a service which actually tries to help victims of stalking. One last question to you, Raina, before I turn to Rachel. I mean, having heard the minister describe what she's trying to do, is any of that be of any use to you in the run-up to that terrible abuse you suffered? Would you at any stage have turned to the authorities, do you think, and said, I need some help?
I don't think I would have turned to the authorities, but like they say, with having body cams on and seeing the way they're acting and all that, trying to gather evidence, yeah, but saying that, there was one case where I ended up getting arrested through Daryl because he wouldn't buy any food, and I ended up shoplifting £3.70 worth of stolen goods from Aldi, and he ran off and I got arrested for it. And the police, during the interview, I told them certain things that Daryl was doing. I wasn't exactly telling him he was hitting me, but I told him a few things, and they actually said they would have checkups on me. I was 17 at the time and I was classed as a minor. The police, after I got let out, the police never come up, checked on me, and 3 weeks later I was in the hospital because of what Daryl did.
Yeah. And well, Raina, as I say, we wish you all the best for the future. You sound pretty chirpy and full of life, so that's great. Take care of yourself, and thank you for talking to us.
Thank you.
Let's have a chat to Rachel Horman, from who's a lawyer. Hi, Rachel.
Good morning.
What do you make of this new law? I mean, I can't help feeling it's fearsomely difficult to implement.
Well, I welcome the new law. It's something that's been needed for many years, and I think most people have assumed that the law does protect against this kind of abuse and are actually quite surprised to find out that it doesn't. There are difficulties. We've seen that with the stalking law, but what we've also seen with the stalking legislation is that where good quality training is provided to the police, to the CPS and to the judiciary, then the legislation does work. So I think that's the key to this. Unless we have money set aside to train the professionals, then it won't work. But if we do have that, then I think there's a good chance it will work, and it will actually prevent physical abuse from taking place, because coercive control, in my view, is what allows the physical abuse to take place.
Yeah, although you'll have heard Raina say that over the years of that kind of coercive control, which she was undoubtedly suffering, she was still prepared to say, I love this man, and she would not have sought help anyway.
Well, that's the nature of coercive control.
But that's the problem, isn't it? I mean, if the victim is not going to say, look what this man is doing to me, there's not very much the authorities can say. I mean, and actually I'm getting quite a lot of text saying sometimes coercive control can be applied the other way around. I know it doesn't often lead to violence, but sometimes it even leads to violence. So it's not necessarily coercive control exercised by only one side of the partnership. I guess it can be women on men as well?
It can be, yes. But when we look at the violence, the repeat violence that does tend to be men against women, and the fear element, I think, is generally more common with men perpetrating that against women.
Yeah, but you know, as I say, that she wouldn't have referred. I did ask her several times. She would not.
But there would have been no point. There would have been no point in her reporting that at the time.
No, she loved
because
the man.
It wasn't.
She didn't want to. She wanted to save him. She didn't want to give him to. She was part of the system in which he applied, and she was accepting it. I mean, I don't see that, whatever you do to the law, you're not going to change that, I suspect.
Well, first of all, we can publicise that it's wrong. And at the moment, it's actually legal to do that kind of thing. So that's the first thing. So sending that message out, not just to the victim and making the victim realise that it's illegal, but also to the perpetrator, because I hear lots of cases where the perpetrator will say to the victim, well, at least I don't hit you. I'm not doing anything wrong. And they know that they can't be arrested for this type of behaviour. I have a client that was made to eat all of her meals out of a dog bowl on the floor. That's not illegal at the moment. So this law is absolutely needed, and it's vital to save victims.
Yeah, that does sound an extreme event. I mean, how widespread? I mean, and are you happy as a lawyer that you can define coercive behaviour? That's what is coercive, what isn't?
I think if you try and define it as in give specific examples, there'll be something that you haven't thought of that we then miss, and victims will fall through the net. I think this type of behaviour, much like the stalking behaviour, it's obvious when you see it, and that's the legislation is drafted on that basis. We're looking at a pattern. We're not looking at couples falling out and having an argument. We're looking at a pattern of controlling or coercive behaviour, and it will be obvious when you see it. And that's what we need to be fighting against.
The government, the minister said when it's all going to start before the end of the year. You got hopes for it?
Yes, I would expect that it will come in before the end of the year. I know that the government are just finalising the guidelines at the moment, but like I say, it's the training that's going to be key on this, because I think domestic abuse is something that is misunderstood by professionals. There's still a lot of emphasis on the victim, a lot of victim blaming. Why don't you leave? Why didn't you leave? The responsibility isn't on the victim. We need to be looking at prosecuting the perpetrators.
That's Rachel Horman, thank you, a domestic abuse lawyer at Watson Ramsbottom in Lancashire, and chairs something called Paladin, which is a service which supports victims of stalking. If you've been affected by any of the issues we've been discussing this morning, you can contact us, of course, but you can also contact the National Domestic Violence Helpline. The number is 0808 2000 247. 0808 2000 247. It's 11 o'clock. First.